The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Catherine Nichols, author of Alice's Wonderland, A Visual Journey Through Lewis Carroll's Mad, Mad World. Stick around. I promise neither of us is mad as a hatter. Mad as a Beetlejuice, maybe. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you preferred to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media Interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of imaginary creatures first dreamed up in 1865, but who have never strayed far from the nearest looking glass, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Quite honestly, I was never a big Alice in Wonderland fan. I remember reading Lewis Carroll's classic in its entirety for a freshman lit class at the University of Miami, and being as unmoved by it then as I was when I saw a TV adaptation in the 1970s. What has always caused admiration in me, however, is its enduring popularity and mystique. Anyone who writes books for a living can appreciate anything that lasts as long as this book has and remains as popular. Now, Catherine Nichols is completely enraptured by Carroll's work, which was first published in 1865 and has never been out of print since. That's incredible. That's 150 years. In researching her new coffee table book, Alice's Wonderland, A Visual Journey Through Lewis Carroll's Mad, Mad World, she uncovered a plethora of stunning images and Alice lore that even I couldn't help but be impressed by. It's a beautiful book, and she tells of Alice's literary journey through 150 years in a mesmerizing visual fashion. If you are an Alice fan, you'll want this book physically in your home library. This is not an e-book, folks. You want to have this. You want to hold this. Where do you see the art in this book? Catherine Nichols, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. It's a beautiful book.
It is. Thank you. It was a lot of work.
I bet.
A lot.
You can see that. I was honest about it. I admit that I never really got Alice. Can you make a believer out of me? Do you want to take a shot?
If you've read it, I don't think I can, because I would say that's the best argument for becoming a fan is to actually go and read the books themselves, both Alice's Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. And I would say that nowadays, so many people have not had that experience because they are more familiar with Alice in Wonderland through media, through, you know, starting back with probably most likely Disney's animated version in 1951, and now, especially since 2010 with the Burton's movie and all the other things out there, I would say most people have not really gone and read the book. So if you have and haven't liked it, then I would have to just respect your opinion and say it's a different sub opinion.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like I think it's a bad book. It just didn't work for me.
It has a lot of wordplay. I mean, Lewis Carroll liked to satirize and he liked to parody and he liked to make fun. And that, I think, is what really draws me to his books is I just love the wordplay. And I didn't read the book myself when I was a child. I didn't read it until I was in my late teens. And I came across an annotated edition of it. So I read it, you know, with reading the references and getting the jokes in a way that probably is lost on most children. And so that's really what I enjoyed about the book the most.
Well, and I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, is your understanding that it was more of an adult book when it was written?
No.
It was written for children.
Lewis Carroll very specifically wrote it for children. And in fact, he very specifically wrote it for one child.
Yeah.
And then when he gave her the book to her, with drawings that he drew himself, and presented it to her, and it was only afterwards when he had shown friends copies of the book and that they pressed him to get to publish, you know, to actually physically publish a book and to share it with children, you know, all children, not just Alice.
Well, there's a lot of parody in the book, and this is what I was getting at, that would go above the would go above most children as readers.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Though I think probably for children of the day, they would have been more familiar with it, with some of the poems, because some of the poems that Alice recites incorrectly, the kids would have been very aware of the original. So they probably got it. But no, kids today, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Bat would probably be an exception, because most kids today know Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, I would hope. So he made a parody and did Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Bat.
Well, and that was kind of what, from what I recall of reading it in college, it was the children's lit class. I think we also read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh, that's another great book.
And probably Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing that struck me, I think where I had trouble with Alice was the teacher was emphasizing a lot of the parody and the satire. And I think that type of thing does not tend to survive the decades. It seems like it's, you know, because the references are lost. You don't know what, you know, you watch The Daily Show today and, you know, great. Yeah. It's hysterical because it's based on what's in the headlines today. You watch today's Daily Show in 10 years or 30 years or 40 years. It's not really going to be that funny because you know, you're going to hear the audience laughing. You're going to go, I don't get it.
What is it about? I think there is some truth to that. But I would say with Lewis Carroll, I think a lot of, because of the characters, because of he was dealing with such universal themes of childhood, of growing up, of Alice trying to make it in a strange world and try and figure it out. I think those enduring things, I think you can enjoy it without understanding all the little references. I think kids would enjoy, you know, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Bat, even if they didn't get, I don't think you need to have it all explained. It helps, perhaps, especially if it, you know, you're studying it in a college class. Yes, then I think you do need to. But I think kids can enjoy the story and the illustrations, which are so wonderful, you know, in so many different kinds of editions.
How does it hold up against a more modern era British bit of young person's fiction, like a Harry Potter? You know, how do you compare the two? Can you compare the two?
I would say, and I've said this in other interviews, I don't know if
Wait,
we would have...
You've done other interviews?
Yes.
I'm not your only one.
You're not my first.
All right, well, that hurts. But go
but
ahead, I'm sorry.
You're my first video, so...
All right, good. All right, I'll take that.
Because I think for Harry Potter, we might not have Harry Potter if it wasn't for Lewis Carroll and Alice in Wonderland, because until that time, until when he was writing, children's literature was very didactic, very, you know, you had to teach a child the morals. Reading wasn't for fun. It was for learning. It was for becoming a better person. And Lewis Carroll had no truck with that. He did not believe that. He thought books could be fun, and he loved telling stories. He was a great storyteller, and he would. He grew up as the an older brother of many, many siblings, and he entertained them with stories. He put on puppet shows for them. So it was very natural for him when he came upon the Alice and her siblings to tell them stories. What was unusual is that she got him to write it down. So he really believed in stories for stories' sake, and which is a very now and then that eventually led to the golden age of children's literature, and the whole idea of fantasy, of a make-believe world, of Alice falling down a rabbit hole and landing in this fantastical world where nothing made sense, where cats disappeared and just their smiles remained, and white rabbits in waistcoats, all that he made up. And so I would say, you know, would Harry Potter exist? Perhaps, but would it exist exactly as it does? I don't know. He was really, you know, the grandfather of a lot of the children's literature that exists today.
Now, as part of your research, you went to Carroll's hometown.
Yes.
In the UK.
Well, I went to Oxford.
You went to Oxford. I'm sorry. And how did that enhance your understanding of the man and his work?
Oh, greatly. I was so glad that I got the opportunity to go. First of all, Oxford is just wonderful. And walking around, first of all, I took the one of the first things we did was my husband and I went on a river tour that goes up the Thames. And so you take, it's called the Alice in Wonderland tour. And you get to see what on the day that he told this story to Alice and her sisters was on during a boat ride and up that very river. And so it was just to see it and to know and to be able to think, you know, that 150 odd years ago, he was on that same river and telling that story to these kids was just very thrilling. And just walking around Oxford and seeing the old buildings, and that's where he taught for so many years and had, you know, lived and walked and socialized. So it was very exciting.
Yeah, we took my wife and I and our daughter took a trip last summer, a year ago summer, I guess, to London, largely prompted by their interest in Harry Potter and wanting to see. And it made it. I'm not a huge Potter fan. I've seen all the movies. I've read a couple of the books. But it was fascinating to have a little more context for references and just the way people sound and you know, the response.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there's one of the exhibits I went to, they had the dodo bird that, you know, supposedly he was influenced by. That was his nickname, the dodo. And, you know, just there's just so many things that you can't see anywhere else. So I was very glad to go.
Now, your book is not a biography per se. Other people have done that. And you're not trying to do that, but you do tell some of his story. And I wondered, was it ever difficult sorting out fact from fiction with Carroll?
Well, there is. I don't know about so much sorting out fact from fiction. There are some different interpretations that people have. Some, you know, questions about when he did things about, you know, even about the river trip. I mean, one famous thing about the river trip when he told the story is the recollection of, I hope I get this right now, but Alice's recollection of that day, I think their recollection is that it's a sunny, sunny day. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful summer's day. When I think someone actually checked the weather and it was actually supposedly a very dreary, dreary day. Personally, knowing England, I'm willing to go with the dreary and think,
yeah.
I think maybe in their memories, which people often do because it was such a wonderful day, they made the weather better in their imagination. I don't know. But so there were little things like that came up. And, you know, what you do is you read a lot of sources and you just try and go with the ones that have the most, you know, authority behind them. That's what I tried to do, at least.
And of course, there's been a lot of speculation over the years about the relationship between Carol, which, of course, I do know that is his pen name. I get that. And Alice. And I thought it was interesting. You do make note that in his diary after he died, the pages relating to her were torn out. So
yes.
Some things we'll just never know, because she didn't leave a record either.
Well, she lived a very long life, and she was frankly, and I think she said as much, she was a little tired of being associated so strongly with Alice, as Alice all her life. And it's not that she didn't, I think she it was just, you can imagine if that's all everyone ever says about you is that, you know, you were that Alice. I think she got a little tired of it. But yes, he did, as going back to what you were saying about the pages in his journal, he didn't tear them out. Members of his family did. And they seem to be very private people. And, you know, again, that's something there's a lot of discussion. What did those pages say? I don't think, how will we ever know?
No. Well, and you also mentioned that Alice's family kind of cut him off. At one point.
They did. They did have a falling out, and that's probably what most people assume that those pages refer to. In one biography, recent biography I read, there was the author speculates that perhaps he had proposed, he had gone to the parents and asked for not Alice's hand in marriage, but her older sister's hand in marriage. That's what she puts forth. It's a theory. I think we will never know. So that's why those pages were burned. It could have been something so you know, unimportant that we would laugh if we did know, but we don't know.
It could be something that we would consider quite innocent. And
very likely.
They did not find it that innocent, whatever it might be.
Exactly.
All right, so enough about Carol and his life and Alice and her life. Let's talk about the art in the book, which is mm-hmm. really the point of the book. The artwork that you've used, I mean, to illustrate this, it's really stunning. And it's quite a variety. There's paintings, there's, drawings, there's photos, there's all kinds of stuff. Did you find it all yourself? And, you know, where did you go looking? How did you find it?
Well, did I find it all myself? For the book, I did a lot of the photo researching, giving them ideas. And we did have a photo researcher, though, who actually did all the hard work of actually going and finally sorting through those images and my suggestions. You know, I would see them as I did my research, either in books or online or wherever. I always did try to make sure that there was a source for it, because I didn't want to send the photo researcher on a wild goose chase. But, you know, I would just give her my suggestions, and then she took it from there. And so she's really the one responsible for doing all the actual legwork and getting the permissions. And I know even last minute, some of the permissions did fall through. It's always hard getting Disney permissions and things like that. There's so many images out there. You really can't go wrong. There are just so many fantastic. I mean, you wish the book could have been, you know, at least double the size and show. I kept wanting to say, show more.
Well, Mark Burstein, who did your introduction, makes the point that some of his favorite images did not make the book, and I suspect then some of your favorite images probably didn't make the book.
As I said, you could do just a book just on the illustrations alone, but when you're talking about, then you're also showing the movies and TV shows and operas and ballet, and it goes on and on.
Well, what were you looking for? You know, what did you have in mind to best illustrate? Was it just a variety of what was available, or was there something in particular?
I wanted to show the variety for certain, and just how different people and how through the times, really, the illustrations changed as well. As we get to more modern times, the illustrators become a little more edgier and get a little darker. And you can really see that, you know, as you get on to modern times and you see some of the games, you know, that are being played, video games, and some of them are quite dark. And you see Alice, you know, she's no longer a sweet little girl in a white pinafore. Her pinafore is splattered with blood because she's just gone and chopped off, I don't know, someone's head. Or this is McGee's Alice, which is video game that where you play online and where you your avatar is Alice and you take her through all these different dark and scary rooms as she's trying to hunt down the Red Queen.
I'm assuming that,
Queen of Hearts.
I'm sorry. I'm assuming at this point that the book is in public domain, which is why things like that happen.
The illustrations, yes. That happened, I'm trying to think, that when that happened in Lewis Carroll's lifetime, they just went wild. All of a sudden you saw all these books hit the, when the copyright for the illustrations expired, all these illustrated books came out. But I think it's a good thing because you do need, I mean, Tennille's versions of the illustrations, which are forever associated and which are wonderful. On the other hand, you do need to other people need to get their versions in as well.
Did you have, well, you must have some favorite images in the book?
Oh, I certainly do. Yes. You mean, are you talking now just of the illustrators?
Well, just illustrators, photos, whatever images. I know you're, I mean, you're a big Alice fan, so I'm thinking you must have some favorite images overall.
Yes, I do. I mean, I love Rackham's illustrations. I love Peake's illustrations. I of course, I have favorite movies and some not so favorite movies. I mean, and films and TV shows. It was researching this. I watched a lot of shows.
Yeah, I would think so. Did you? Were they all available? I mean, I'm thinking.
No, they weren't. A lot. I managed to track down quite a bit. Some are available online only, like the very early ones. The first film is available online that you can watch for free. And some of the others I had to buy. Some of the others I had to hunt down through library sources. It was a surprise all the time. Like, how am I going to find this? How am I going to get my hands on this and watch it?
Well, now, of course, I asked you not to look at the screen, but I'm going to ask you for this. This was actually my favorite. It's a photo. Let's see if I can get it.
Oh, yes.
Right. This is from the BBC production?
Yes.
I just thought that was just that captured, I thought, Alice very well.
Mm-hmm.
A little hard for me to, yeah. So you've seen it.
Yes.
That's page 88. I like that a lot. And one of the things I noticed is that there are the occasional reference in the book to Doctor Who. Apparently modern-day Alice has connections to Doctor Who.
Yes, more than once. There were actors or actresses who were in Doctor Who and who went on, or who probably started with Alice and then went on to play in Doctor Who, yes. I think the bear Doctor Who is like our Law and Order, though, you know? It's like, really, every actor, at least in New York City, has been in has starred in Law and Order at some point in their career.
Right.
I'm convinced.
I know that you're correct about that, because every time you see a repeat of the show, you're like, oh, that's...
that's so-and-so.
Oh, my God, it's Nicole Kidman. No, I mean, maybe...
And I think Doctor Who is like that for the British.
Well, and I think one of the... one of the young women who played Alice in a production went on to be a companion.
Yes.
It wasn't just that she had a walkthrough. She was actually a companion.
Yes.
Neither one of us is a big enough Doctor Who fan to know exactly who that was offhand, but yeah. So that was kind of interesting. In the book, there are two other categories that you touch on. You talk about songs. Pop songs. Grace Slick's White Rabbit.
White Rabbit. Walrus.
I'm the Walrus. Tom Petty. This one's Tom Petty's Don't Come Around Here No More. Now, that was interesting. I would have never made that connection.
Yes, and that video, you can watch that one on online as well. And that is well worth it. It's really funny, and I think it's controversial. I'm trying to remember now, but I think there was some controversy about the way it ends, which is that they're all eating a giant cake, like she's kind of a half cake, half woman, Alice, and they're all eating her. It's definitely worth, I would Google it and watch it. It's worth it.
You know what? I looked at what you had in there, and I remember the song. I could, I had the song in my head for a lifetime. And I hadn't thought about the video. Of course, the video is all Alice.
It's all Alice.
Yeah, I get that now. Now, I Am the Walrus, though, the Beatles. That was another one that I thought was a little bit of a stretch, but why is that in there?
Well, I Am a Walrus, it's like a lot of so many Beatles songs in where exactly, I mean, John Lennon he knew Alice in Wonderland for sure. It was one of his favorite books. So, one of the poems, The Walrus and the Carpenter, was a favorite of his. And many people believe that his I Am the Walrus refers back to Lewis Carroll and that poem. Whether it's true or not, I can't say for sure, but I do know that many people do believe that.
Now, coming into writing this book and putting it together, were you already aware of these songs or these things that came up in the course of research and talking to people?
I was aware of some of it. I was aware of I Am a Walrus. Yes, I was aware of that. I did not know about the Tom Petty. No, that came as a complete surprise, as did a lot of the others. Again, I knew many of the Alice in Wonderland movies and certainly some of the TV shows, but many were a complete surprise, a very happy surprise, and others are not so happy surprises.
Okay. And then the other category was comic books and graphic novels.
Yes.
Now, as someone who's read, and maybe this is why I'm not a big Alice fan, as someone who's read way too many comic books in his life, not recently, but I know there have been a lot of references to Alice and Wonderland over the years. I've thought it's just a little too easy a go-to place for some
yes.
of those writers and artists. Anything there that interested you, though? I mean, you have some of them in the book.
Many of them. I'm not a big comic book fan in terms of the superheroes, although I was interesting to learn at what I did about Batman and how the Mad Hatter appeared in and was such a – I didn't ever realize that he was such a character in the Batman mythology. I love – my personal favorite of all the comics was – and I actually – and I – when I – this is not something I knew about, and when I did find out about it, I went out and bought it, and I'm very glad I did – is The Simpsons had a one-issue comic book featuring – the only one featuring Lisa on The Simpsons. And it is, I think, one of the best parodies of Alice in Wonderland I've ever read. I love it. It has a lot of wordplay. It has a lot of fun. Lisa is following Ned, the postman. He's a postman, and she's trying to write a letter. And she follows him into a kind of Wonderland setting. And there's just so much wordplay and anagrams. And she goes to Backwood Town, where everyone speaks backwards. And it's one of the few that I feel is really Lewis Carroll in spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, the writer really took the spirit of Lewis Carroll and what he was trying to do 150 years ago and put it into a modern sensibility. And I love that one.
Well, you can't get any more modern than The Simpsons, I
think. No, you can't.
No, definitely not. And then you mentioned when we started talking Johnny Depp and Tim Burton and Alice.
Yes.
What do you think about that? Are you comfortable with that? Is that a good version of Alice for people?
I will have to say that movie got so much hype. Disney really promotes its movies, and they certainly promoted that one. I watched it. I liked it. I did like it. I love Tim Burton's movie. So I'm a big fan. I'm a big Tim Burton fan, if I'm not as much a Disney fan, but I am a big Tim Burton fan. And I think they did a good job. And I think there's a lot in it that I did like. Overall, it wasn't one of my favorites.
I haven't seen it again because, you know, it's just not my thing.
But many people do love it. And, you know, it's certainly like all of Tim Burton's movies. It's visually very exciting. He throws a lot into it and the characters. And it's an interesting take because he's not trying to retell the story. What he's doing is he's having Alice's grown up now and going back to Wonderland. So he takes it from a different angle.
So you'll be there when the sequel comes out?
I will watch the sequel, okay. Yes.
All right. So just kind of wrapping up, I guess. I understand that, and I don't have the addresses, but you have a blog on Alice?
No, I have my own personal blog, The Calf in the Hat, which I do discuss Alice. And I'm a children's book writer, so I discuss children's books there, including Alice in Wonderland.
Got it. Okay. And then, actually, just looking behind you, any items on your desk or behind you you'd like to show off and tell us?
Oh, sure, I would, actually. Let's see. Well, this is probably very stale now, but this is a Alice in Wonderland gingerbread cookie.
Can you hold it up a little higher?
How's that?
Good. And a little to your, just center it. There you go. Now that's good.
Okay.
Wow, look at that.
This is from the Mad Batter Bakers in Toronto.
Okay.
When I went to speak at the Lewis Carroll Society of North America, this was in the goodie basket.
Nice.
So I haven't eaten it yet, and I don't know. I don't know how long it will stay preserved.
Yeah.
But...
I might want to just keep that in the bag. It might be a little too late to eat it.
I think it would be a little too late.
Yeah.
To eat. Let's see what else. This is a favorite of mine. I think it's in the book. This is a board book of Alice in Wonderland for babies.
Oh.
And it just really shows the colors. It's very simple, but it just goes to show that you're never too young.
Down the rabbit hole.
Lewis Carroll and Alice in Wonderland.
Okay. Very nice.
And then up there, there's a pop-up book, and this is I have some old editions. My husband got me this for my birthday, some very beautifully bound old editions of Alice in Wonderland with the original illustrations. And so, and I have a lot more, but I have a lot more, but they don't all fit in that bookcase.
I got it. Nice, very nice.
Spread out around the house.
All right. That's the advantage of the video. We get to snoop around in people's homes. All right. And so what are you going to do next? Do you have a plan for another book next?
I always have plans for books. I do have one that I'm working around the back of my mind, but it's not going to be on anything with have to do with not directly to do with literature. I'm a big dog lover, so I'm thinking of a book having to do with dogs next.
Nice. I like dogs. I like dogs. I may not be an Alice fan, but I like dogs. All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find Catherine Nichols' Alice's Wonderland, A Visual Journey Through Lewis Carroll's Mad, Mad World, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching this video on MrMedia.com or you're listening to the audio on MrMedia.com, just below the video somewhere, over there, you should see a cover of the book. You can click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon.com, and you can order the book from them. They can get it to you via drone, probably in 30 minutes or less from what I hear. I don't know if that's true. If not, you can order it, and if you have Amazon Prime, you can have it in 2 days, free delivery, or some variation thereof. But click on the book. If you love Alice, you're going to really enjoy this book. So get yourself a copy of it. So you mentioned the blog. You want to give the address for your blog?
It's the Calf in the Hat at blogspot.com.
Okay.
Is that it? Blog?
The Calf, C-A-T-H.
The Calf. It's C-A-T-H in the hat.
Okay. .blogspot.com. And we'll have the link down there underneath the book somewhere. So you can just click on that if you don't want to trust my spelling. are you on Twitter or Facebook, any of that kind of social media?
I am on Twitter, and Facebook I think I keep private for now, but I am on Twitter.
Okay, we all want to pry into your Facebook account. Now that you've told us it's private, we have extra incentive to want to know what's going on there. All right, well, Catherine Nichols, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's a beautiful book. And
thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Thank you, Bob. And I would just like to make one final plea and say, do yourself a favor and reread Alice. You never know. You might have a different take.
I will take that under advisement.
Okay.
I will do that. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Streets now. Turn out the stereo receiver.
to believe her. A bad idea to believe her. Turn up the stereo receiver. Turn up the stereo receiver.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com, the George and Tony Entertainment Show from the Realm Network.
This is Snake. Do you read me, Otacon?
Loud and clear, Snake.
Did you listen to the latest episode of the Gaming Marathon on the Realm Network?
Of course. They really know their stuff about gaming, especially that Usid guy.
Yeah, but that Chirac guy is a real jerk. I don't like him.
Regardless, their reviews are spot on and they tell it like it is.
That's for sure.
What happened, Snake? Were you spotted?
Nah, it's just Lowell Melser crying about the O's again.
Whew. Close call.
I better continue the search for Metal Gear, but keep listening to the Gaming Marathon each week.
You got it, Snake.
New every Monday afternoon right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
These are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.